Bhagavad Gita, as we have been seeing, is the great science of manifesting our intrinsic divinity. As human beings, we have infinite possibilities. And Bhagavad Gita tells us how to manifest these, how to make these possibilities practically come forth in our life, and thus we become perfected and completely fulfilled in this life. The whole thing is like, you know, transforming ourselves, practically removing the obstacles to the manifesting of the divinity by a process. Like we have a process, for example, I saw a paper factory, a paper mill. A lot of those bamboos and other things were brought there. And then there was a system of various machineries, and that bamboo would go at one end and the finished paper would come out at the other end. So this is also a machinery. Bhagavad Gita presents us with this system where at the end we put man, the animal, at the end comes out man, the divine. A very powerful tool. And we have to apply ourselves for that. It is a path that needs to be traversed with determination and a tremendous care and caution. In our last class, we had been studying that how a person needs to be quite observant, careful in leading a life of spiritual aspirant. In Kathopanishad, for example, it is told that this is like walking on a razor's edge. When we are climbing on a path, that is an uphill task, and one has to be careful because one can slide down. One may ask the question, then why, if we want to remain safe and secure, let us not climb at all? This life, if spiritual life is full of so many dangers, why take it up? Because this life, as human beings without any ideal, is already a life at the rock bottom. So therefore there is no possibility of falling. If we want to be satisfied just with that, then of course it is okay. There are some people who do not want anything higher than that. But majority of human beings want something higher. That is why we see so much of struggle in human life to become better. If we speak of religion or God, people feel, that is all old-fashioned thing. We don't want to talk about that. Religion and all, they are the things of the bygone ages. Now, we don't want that. It is, we are modern scientific people. But those very people would want to become better than what they are. We all want to improve our conditions. We all are striving to become better in various ways. Only our ideas of what is better needs to be made clear to ourselves. What do we mean by leading a better life? And there comes these scriptures which clarify our doubts regarding this. They can't do it without our wanting to do it. We should take their help, but the job is to be done by ourselves. Nobody does the job for us. No spiritual teacher, no scriptures, no saint, nobody is going to do that job for us. They can show the way, they can give some hints, some guidance, but basically walking on that path, proceeding on that path is something that we ourselves have to do. And therefore it is told that yes, you have to go very cautiously. It is a path that is like the razor's edge. It is not told to dissuade you or to make you feel, no, then I don't want to go on that path. It is to remind you that you have set on this journey. Now be careful, be cautious, and don't be foolhardy. In last class of Bhagavad Gita, we were seeing that how a human being on this path, because of not being very careful, falls into a cycle, a vicious cycle of degradation. It is when we look at our condition, then we feel that, well, I am so much caught into this net of sensual enjoyments, attractions and repulsions, and all these bondages surrounding me. How did I come to be like this? And then what is the way out? The way out can be seen by studying how this condition comes in life. Like we were discussing the Buddha's parable of knots last Sunday, that when you want to open the knots, you have to see how those threads, they get mixed up with each other. Just pulling the threads here and there, in fact, may tighten the knot further, make it more complicated. So one has to see how those different threads, they get entangled with each other, and then carefully open them. So here too we have to see that what is the cause that we get bound in these sense objects, and how to redeem ourselves. The how to redeem becomes then obvious. How do we come to fall in this ditch? It is not that we fell suddenly. If we see a big ditch, we may not approach it. Oh, I don't want to fall. But if it is just a very gradual decline, we feel happy about it while going on that, and do not realize how ultimately we have ended up going so deep. Sri Ramakrishna went to see those underground, one underground coal mine. I don't know if you have seen any of such thing. It is, and the coal is brought out from deep inside, and there is a road that goes in gradually, slowly. And he said, look, we never realized we have come down already four stories down. Because the path of going down was so gradual, you don't feel like falling then. So similarly, the fall in life also like that begins gradually. Just thinking about the pleasures that something can give us, just a minor titillation, it begins it. And you don't feel at that time that it is a bondage or something. It's just a simple, a little pleasure. Why should I deny myself this little pleasure? I am not going to fall down like that. It is. I will control myself when the situation becomes too difficult. But right now, let me enjoy a little bit. I am just thinking about the object of enjoyment. I am not doing anything bad as such. So, like that it begins, dhyayato vishayan punsah. Attachment gradually grows towards those things. That attachment, that yes, you then find it. What is attachment? You find then it difficult to remove yourself from there. Like when the first those TVs came, I didn't see TV in my childhood at all. It was not known in India except for one or two places. Even when I was going to college, I didn't see the TV. It was not known. We only had read about it in books, but not seen. Then, after I became a monk, there were very rarely that I had seen, because it wasn't there. Then somebody told me, you know, that you see, once these days people, they get glued to it. First they go to see it, and then they cannot remove themselves from that. First they feel, let me watch for a couple of minutes, then I will go to my work. Then they sit there. Afterwards, that is how those TV trays for meals have come up, you know. That even for meals, they don't want to get up from there, so the meals has to be brought where the TV is. Thus it goes on, you know, becoming so much that later on even the idea that I have to remove from there myself is also gone. A complete surrender to the idiot box takes place. It is a nice word, idiot box. It is like that the bondage gradually intensifies. So, that is called attachment. You first go there, you still have your freedom, you feel, I am just going there on my own. I will have the pleasure of that company a little bit. Then I will remove myself. But then attachment gradually develops. Because everything that we try to enjoy, there is a price, friends. And this price is not only monetary price. The price at the level of mind, the entanglement takes place. Everything that we enjoy, that the mind is involved to that extent in that. Mind gets mortgaged to that object of enjoyment, object or person or whatever you may say, the mind to that extent gets involved into it, gets mortgaged there. Then it is difficult to remove from there. So that is called attachment. Sangaha teshu upajayate. Attachment develops there. Then comes the desire for possession. Just attachment initially doesn't appear as desire, but it becomes stronger gradually, and then it comes as desire. I must have this. Then a very strong effort ensues to get that desire fulfilled. And the nature of these desires is very funny. These desires never get fulfilled. That is a curse with the worldly desires. No worldly desire ever gets fulfilled, friends. One may say, no, I had the desire to get a car and I got it. Did it not get fulfilled? Well, apparently so, but really not. What happened was, it gave rise to another desire. It was not fulfillment, But it transformed itself into a different, rather bigger desire. No, I got this car, but really, what I wanted was this thing, some bigger, nice, more fancier car like my neighbor has. So you try to think about that, becomes the transformation of desire. So desires go on becoming like that, and they then meet obstacles. It is, and thus that becomes then anger. Desire becomes anger then. Sangat sanjayate kamah, kamat krodhah abhijayate. That from this desire therefore arises anger. This anger is terrible. It has then visibly terrible effects in our life. Desires do not seem to have such terrible effects. Desires are treated therefore as friends. Like the example that we saw last time, in the form of desire, a Trojan horse is brought in our life, you know. That the anger, enemy anger is hidden in that. We feel that desires are so nice, they bring so much pleasure to my life. If I give up all desires, all pleasures will be gone. So we pull in that Trojan horse, and hidden inside is this anger. And anger, when it comes, it has such a destructive tendency in life. It destroys our own life, the life of people around us. With that desire, when it takes over, it is unstoppable. And something obstructs it, it gets converted into anger. That is why a person who is charged with desire doesn't stop at committing any sin. Doesn't think of any what are my values? Where has gone my moral standards? All those things are thrown to winds because of this intensity of desire and the anger that ensues from that. In Ramayana, therefore it is said, Kama turanam na bhayam na lajja. The one person, because of the tremendous force of desire, loses all sense of even the fear of the society or the fear of the moral bindings. All those are just thrown to winds. Even no sense of shame remains that what am I doing? Such a person can commit any crime, can kill mother, can murder any near and dear can be murdered. Or any such sin can happen. We then wonder, how this person committed sin? How did I commit such a sin? Where is the root? It is very easy to tell people, don't commit sins. But just telling, had it worked, it would have been, our society would have been different. One has to really employ the right technique to make ourselves morally sound and strong. And the word morality is liked by us. But remember, friends, without spirituality, morality is on a very flimsy ground. The police can keep society moral only to some extent. Not much beyond that, unless there are the higher goals for human life. Unless there is some higher perception, the moral disciplines cannot be maintained just by the police force. We see a person steals. Here it is, I am not talking just about legal morality. Legal morality, well, we know. If you can skirt around the law, you can be immoral and yet will not get caught. That is not, but your conscience always catches you. It is, the police may not catch you because you have not done anything illegal, although it is immoral. It is possible that somebody who is caught stealing a few dollars is caught and put into jail. Somebody else who steals millions of dollars in a legal way can become a big political leader of the society, you see. It is commonly seen in society that, but the conscience never forgives you. The life goes on and getting further and further degraded, and therefore it is told here that with this anger, all sense of propriety or all sense of values is lost. The memory about all these things becomes completely degraded. You lose the sense, who am I? What am I here for? What are my ideals? Where is my sense of what is right and what is not right? All that is completely forgotten. That is called Smriti Vibhramaha. Sammoha Smriti Vibhramaha. And that Smriti Vibhramaha, loss of memory, brings then the person becomes completely incapable of rising spiritually. And that is what is called the destruction, spiritual destruction of a person. One becomes then, one feels, I have no hope now. Even those thoughts of rising higher do not come to us. So therefore, one has to learn. This is told not to depress anybody, but to remind ourselves that we have to, at our own level, learn to be cautious, so that we will not get caught in these traps of attraction, attachment, desire, anger, delusion, loss of memory, and spiritual destruction. It is not told that, therefore, now what to do? Should I then sit into my room and lock my everything, do not go out for the fear of getting attached? It is all in the mind. Just by avoiding to go out, you will not be able to escape that. It is therefore told what needs to be done. The 64th verse of second chapter. Raga dvesha viyuktaistu vishayan indriyaischaran atmavashyair vidheyatma prasadam adhigachyati. And the technique is therefore to be in this world. Bhagavad Gita is not preaching run away from the world. No. In fact, we always have to remember this. Arjuna wanted to run away. And Sri Krishna told, no, no, you can't run away. Running away is not solution. You have to mold your life while being in this world. Do your duties. But how? Raga dvesha viyuktaihi. But that person of controlled self who moves about amidst the sense object with the senses governed by the self and free from attachment and aversions, he attains serenity. Serenity is attained by that person who moves in the midst of all the objects, but with control. It is not that the attractions and aversions are governing the life. the higher sense that what is right and what is not right is governing what is to be done and what is not to be done. It is, I have the eyes and therefore I can see and I should use the eyes for seeing. But what should be seen and what should not be seen, I should not decide, I will decide that. It is, eyes are for my use. I should use the eyes to see what is beneficial for me. Eyes can see everything. But does it mean that I have to see everything? It is not so. Providence mall has almost anything in the world maybe. It is, so many things are available there. But does it mean that if you go there you have to buy everything? You see what you need, what is beneficial to you, buy that. Of course, there also many people do not have that discrimination because of the things are presented in such an enchanting way to tempt. The buyers have to be tempted. That is the way of marketing, you know, that if a person just buys what one needs, then our economy will not go on at all. It is, one has to be tempted to buy. Therefore, when these temptations do not work, because of some grave situation or a big problem, like the 9/11 attack, suddenly economy started going down and president had to tell people, go and buy things, the economy is going down. People were not buying things with that feeling of, oh, everything is uncertain, what will happen if I go to the mall and the mall itself gets bombed, the fear has taken hold of people. So they were not going out, they were not buying. So, what they were not buying, whatever was necessary was being bought. What was not necessary, what one could do without, was not being bought, that's all. So, what is necessary is usually very little. Our life does not become so complex then. But we go to mall, see so many things, and hey, let me have this and this and this and this. The whole carload is bought. And it becomes a big headache later. What is to be done with it now? So you have to buy a bigger house now to keep all these things. So now look for a bigger house. How do you really need all those things? And we get into these problems gradually like that. You know? So, just because you can buy doesn't mean you have to buy. And similarly, this idea has to be put in our use of the sense organs. There are many things that eyes can see, but does it mean eyes have to see them? See only that which is beneficial to you, that which helps us to go towards the goal of life. See that. Don't see other things. Why? We see something and then the mind gets rattled and cannot think of higher thoughts for a long time. Why? Because we saw something. Now who told you to see that? It is, so one has to be cautious about it. The sense organs are to be used. They are not to be shut. Very important thing. By shutting them, you don't realize the truth. They have to be used. So, Vishayan Indriyesh Charan, that yes, the sense objects are to be perceived by these sense organs. But how? Raga Dvesha Vyuktai. This idea you will find in Vedanta all the time. very important thought and very potent in transforming our lives, that remove these attractions and repulsions, that attractions and aversions should not guide our life. That is animal level. That animal, for an animal, it is whatever the animal is attracted to. Well, that is, it goes there, and what it doesn't like doesn't come there. So likes and dislikes propel our animal life. But a conscientious human life has to transcend that idea of running towards what I like and just running away from what I dislike is to be converted into this thought that I should take what is right, I should go to what is right. I like it or I don't like, doesn't matter. Like at our breakfast table, some are very cautious, you know, that what they should eat. They eat only what is right for them. I eat whatever I like, you know, doesn't care. But it is some I see very particular at the dining table. They take care what is right for them. Even if I persuade them, hey, have a little, why you are so worried about that, why you are afraid? They just politely refuse, say maybe later, maybe next time, because not that they don't like it, but they know that it is not right for them. And so therefore, although they like it, the higher sense guides them that they shouldn't have it. So, that is what our life should be led in all different aspects. The likes and dislikes is the animal that is guiding us. Whereas, these higher ideas, what is right and what is not right, is the divine ideal. Path to divine ideal follows through this. So, therefore, Lord Krishna tells here that don't care about what attracts you and what repels you. Raga dvesha viyuktahi. And this tu. It is the word tu means but. And in Vedanta, such literature, it has a technical significance too. That it means it in a strong way, in an emphatic way. When you want to say something very emphatically, this tu is used. So in commentaries you read tu nishchayarthe. Tu is this word but here. But is to emphasize a determined approach. So, this earlier verses, they say, so may give you a sense that, so I will shut myself. That is not going to stop the desires. That is not going to stop your thinking of those desirable objects either. What one has to do, therefore there is but what you should be doing. Be in this world, do your duties, but learn to extricate yourselves from these attractions and repulsions. Let us learn to live like masters, not living like slaves. Being slave to sense organs and the objects which drag us, it is the life of slavery. And sometimes which when we are accustomed to slavery, it becomes very difficult. That is considered to be the life. That is why many people do not like or do not even care to listen to these thoughts. Because, say, what is there? I will do what I like, that is my freedom. But is it freedom? It is the slavery of the objects that keep on pulling us. freedom would be there if you have the strength to get yourself away from them. But these entanglements and these bondages become gradually, we become so accustomed to it that we feel pleasure in that. Those chains are considered as very nice ornaments that we are wearing. So we don't want to get rid of them. Oh, my chains will be taken away. Who wants them? These are such nice chains. I like them. So we love this bondage. That is the worst stage of slavery, when one starts taking pleasure in slavery. So therefore, a spiritual aspirant should beware that one doesn't sink to that level. That idea of freedom must be kept continuously burning in us. That raga dvesha viyuktaihi, that we should free ourselves from these attractions and repulsion, and vishayan indriya ischaran. Then the objects will be perceived by the sense organs, will be correspondingly acted upon. That freedom is very important. It is our sensory system and motor organ system associated with it. It is a very nicely tuned cybernetic system, that as per the sensory perception, the response is automatically generated, and thus we go to get it. There is a nice cake, I see that, and they generate a motor organ response corresponding to that, that you go grab it and start eating it. That is an automatic response, you see. That your eyes or your sense-like nose, you get the fragrance, you get all that. Then the idea comes that this is a very nice thing and I have to have it. So the response come, the motor organs respond to this input. That is how the common animalish life goes on. But in human beings there is this faculty of controlling it. Yes, that is the sensory response. Organs are responding to that. But no, I will control it. I will not let it go like that. These my motor organs should go where I want them to go. So every aspect of life then becomes controlled. And thus you get a higher level of happiness. That is called prasad here. Again, this is a very difficult word to translate in English. The translation that is given here, a very nice translation, serenity. Yeah, but it doesn't convey all the shades of this word prasad. It is a sense of happiness, sense of being satisfied, and yet without the turbulence associated with it. Without the excitement that common sense enjoyment creates in us. It is something that titillates our mind, and then our body is dragged to it, we grab it, and then that excitement comes there, ha, you feel. That is a joy but not prasad. Prasad is where you see that your body and your sensory organs and motor organs, they are under your control. And that brings a sense of assuredness, a sense of a higher level of happiness, that everything is under control. My organs are not running without my permission. So, that comes in the life of this person when this So it is said, Atma Vashyai Videyatma. This word, Atma Vashyai, in one's own control, this idea is very difficult to express in English in simple translation. Videyatma. That it is a very well focused mind, a mind that is focused on the ideal, a person who is determined to get the ideal in life achieved. That person is now have the senses under control and the direction is clear and so moving ahead, and that is the state of a person who gets the control of one's organs. So this is a gradual process again. It is not that one will get the control like Sri Ramakrishna had in a single moment, but we have to practice from where we are. It is nobody is condemned, friends. Everybody, every human being has these possibilities, whatever state that person may be in. It is one has to start from where we are, and then sincerely when we practice, we start progressing. The one who is at the rock bottom level has also the same chance as some person who is almost at the top. It is the levels of control differ in different people, but everybody through gradual practice can achieve these higher and higher levels of control. What happens with this, therefore, next verse very beautifully elaborates that. Prasade sarvadukkhanam hanirasyopajayate prasanna chetaso yashu buddhi paryavatishthate. When this serenity is attained, there results the destruction of all his misery. Verily, the wisdom of the serene-minded one gets steady soon. What is told here as the cessation of all misery, when this state of serenity comes, you feel that you have the control of body and mind, then through this sense of serenity, the life becomes free from these obstacles to a great extent. The material obstacles now do not trouble this person, because that person has understood the futility of running after them anyway. And therefore, the life now is going towards the goal in a very steadfast way. So the suffering here means the misery or suffering. Now all suffering ceases because that person now has found the goal. He has not reached in a way there, but he is seeing it. He has found the road. He knows that it is there. Like when somebody tells you the right direction to go to some place and tells them, well, it is not far from here. Just drive in this way. You are on the right track, don't turn here, there, straight go and you get to that destination in another half an hour. Then you feel a sense of satisfaction and happiness. All the ordeals of journey are now about to be finished. So that is what is meant here. Through such control, one comes to that level. What a great state it is it not? Relatively speaking, this is almost you are there now. We get that assurance, we are almost there. And how to achieve it? the means are with us, just we have to perfect them, that's all. The sense organs are with us, motor organs are with us, the mind is with us. Yeah, just arrange them properly. Perfect those things inside by proper thought and corresponding action. The action guided by proper thought never leads us to frustration. It is by thought we determine what should be my action, then we do that action, and thus we don't have to then repent for that. When that doesn't happen, they impulsively we act, and the thought comes later. It is called then afterthought. It is repentation. Why did I do like this? That is the improper integration, improper joining of our faculties. The actions should get guided by the thought. When actions are guided by the thought, then they go in the proper direction. Thus, this is in a way very simple, friends. This whole procedure is very simple for everybody to follow, because the means are with us. We don't have to go and buy it from anywhere. It is not that somebody has to loan them to us or give them to us. It is all just dependent on us. And thus, if we do not have it, whom to blame, Triveni? Ourselves, is it not? No one but me to blame. It is, therefore, this idea is told here, and told, it is very quickly, Ashu, very nice word. Quickly it happens, doesn't take too long a time. If we are steadily doing it, it will be done very quickly. Very quickly means what? Tomorrow? Well, if you are that determined, tomorrow also. It is not impossible. Tomorrow also it will happen if we are that determined. If not, yes, it may take, depending on how much effort we put in, how much we try to streamline our life. Accordingly, the time will be taken, but not much time. Compared to get masters from a university, people have to spend how many years from they go to that kindergarten, and then slowly 15-20 years or so, then they gradually, like that, they get masters. So compared to that, this is won't take that long time in most cases. We have to be just steadily doing it. Steadiness, resolution, and doing it accordingly pays great dividends in this. Even if a little thing is done regularly, that is very important. Just something simple, you know. Something very simple that, yes, I will meditate every day and at a particular place, at a particular time. It is not so very difficult to do. But if we do, the result is for us to see. We ourselves will be able to see that result. It is not somebody else has to certify it. We will be sure that by this we ourselves have evolved. So, Ashu, very quickly, very surely, certainly one progresses on this path by this and becomes then established. Buddhi paryavatishthate. It is... Verily, the wisdom of the serene-minded one gets steady soon. It is soon. Our wisdom will become steady. Our goal will be clear to us. It will not get that pulled away here and there by the other temptations. So, Lord Krishna tells us that we should follow this path. If not this, then, well, you are asking a question. Our mind is that suppose I don't start on this now, suppose I don't do this, is there any other way? Because of our attachments and feeling that, well, this looks a bit difficult, or what will happen if I don't follow? Well, then let alone the ultimate happiness. As human being, even the worldly happiness is not possible for you. That is a beautiful verse. We will discuss the details next Friday because time is almost up. But I will just read it. Nasti buddhira yuktasya nacha yuktasya bhavana nacha bhavayata shanti ashantasya kutasukham. For the uncontrolled person, there is no knowledge, nor is there meditation for him. For the unmeditative person, there is no peace. And for one bereft of peace, how can there be happiness? So, one, even from the point of view of having a happy life, in fact, if there is happy life possible in the world, nobody would have thought of coming to spiritual path. Had there been possibility of a nice happy life here, religion would have been banished from human society long back. It is not getting banished. Every attempt to destroy or throw out religion from human society has come to a naught only because there is no happiness one can get here. And the reason is, well, no peace. How can you have happiness if no peace? And if, why no peace? If you are not able to calm the mind, that is meditation. Where from is there peace in your life? So learn to calm the mind. It is called, that is called yoga. Now another definition of yoga also is given here. Ayukta, yukta and ayukta. We will discuss that by the grace of God next Friday. Any questions? So let us conclude with the closing prayers. Gita sugita kartavya kimanyat shastra vistarehi ya svayam padmanabhasya mukha padmadvinisrita ekam shastram devaki putra gitam eko devo devaki putra eva eko mantraha tasya namani yani karmapyekam tasya devasya seva Shri Krishna arpanamastu.